Good day, everyone. It's your boy, Matt B. Davis, and the Atlanta Podcast. Hey, guys, is there anything worse than the apology that comes from the podcaster? Sorry I haven't posted. Sorry the content is sounds shitty. I hate to do it. I'm going to do it. Okay, here it comes. Really sorry. It's been late, guys. Got lame excuses. Not going to give them to you. Was about to say it. Not even going to say it. If you know me in real life, if you know me IRL, if you follow me on Facebook, you know what I've been up to. And it's still not a good excuse because I've brought you many episodes in those circumstances traveling previously. So let's not dwell. Let's just go to today's episode. On today's episode, Angel Poventude. Now, Angel, his episode gets one name, Angel, even though we know his full name, because he's one of those guys. He's one of those guys that when you meet someone in Atlanta and they are a new friend and they mention one of like 70 topics that he's involved in or 70 communities he's involved in, you go, oh, do you know Angel? And they go, of course, I love Angel. As predicted, multiple people said hello to him while we were sitting having that interview on the Beltline. You may not be able to hear all of them because like some people just ding, ding on their bike. Some people just stuck their hand up. One guy at the very end did actually come around and talk to us, but it was off mic. But I'm going to say a little something about this episode, which is the reason I waited so long for it, because this is one of the earlier ones. And if you've noticed, I've started to put when we record these and where we record these on the bottom of the intro, not the show notes, which nobody reads, but the actual, this is about this person, yada, yada. I just feel like it gives some history and context. I think it would just be cool to look at over the years. This is when we talk to that person. This is where we talk to that person. This one is back on the Beltline. So first of all, the first, I don't know, 20 interviews I did were all on the back porch of that Beltline. And I've started more recently to mix it up. You'll hear some inside the office, et cetera, et cetera. That's not nearly as important as the content of this, which there was so much feedback on the Gravel episode about the Beltline. And when I thought back on this episode, it felt like we talked a lot of Beltline, and I didn't want to be the fucking Beltline podcast. So I wanted to wait a while, and it's been long enough. And listening back, we talk a lot besides the Beltline. I do think, cringeworthy, I tell that damn story again that I apologized for because I realized I brought it up in every episode. The fireworks story, the motorcycle story. And here's the deal, guys, looking back. I've been hesitating to say this for a while, but I don't know why I told that story so many times. I really don't. I look back on it, and I look back on how I've been received in my neighborhood and by the people that have listened to it, and I honestly sound like the suburban people that are afraid of living in town. And I think I was just trying to show, I don't know why it wasn't so clear to me, but I think I was just trying to show how it's been a struggle. I think just my frustration. I want to be accepted here. I want to like my neighbors. I want to get along with my neighbors. I want to be part of the solution, not the problem. And yeah, looking back, like, it's like, yeah, why is this guy freaking out about those things? Now, there are still some things I'd like to improve. I don't want a kid to fucking ride his bike a million miles an hour down the street and potentially hit someone. And I don't want someone fucking up my park with fireworks. But to only tell those stories and you don't know me gives a real disservice to me. Now, people often say about a show, a reality show or an interview, well, hey, that's taken out of context or that wasn't me. And what's great about what I like about this process when I'm interviewing other folks is that it is them. I don't have to say, don't you think that guy was an asshole? Or don't you think that person evaded the question? Because you'll hear it. So that is me. Clearly, that is a big part of me. But I've had a lot of perspective. I've had a lot of chats, including with people in my neighborhood who have given me some great advice and some great perspective, and I want to have some of those people on the show. But again, I didn't want to be all Beltline or all West End podcast, so I'm bringing you these other people of interest that do really cool things. So Angel's awesome, and again, apologize if you hear some of the same damn stories, which I think he was, this was early on. I have not told those stories again, but this is a way back June, July interview, as you're going to read about. So Angel's awesome. I hope you love him as much as I do, and his sexy voice. Okay, away we go.
Testing.
Testing, testing. All right, dude.
Testing.
Let's dive right in, dude.
All right.
You ready?
Yeah, sure.
So for those that don't know, what's your name?
My name is Angel Poventude, and I've lived in Atlanta since 1998, so going on 19 years.
So where are you from?
Born and raised in Miami, Puerto Rican background.
You're a Rican man?
Yeah. Born and raised in Miami. My parents are born. My dad was born in Puerto Rico. My mom was born in New York. So I'm actually a New York Rican. Grew up in South Florida for the first 25 years of my life. And I've lived in Denver for 1 year, and I've been here 19.
Well, you know, I assumed, which you're never supposed to do, for someone that cares so much about our city, that you were from here.
No. I mean, you can care about somewhere deeply without being from there.
No, of course you can. I'm not from here.
Yeah.
I'm from Boston, of all places. I'm a damn Yankee, but I love it here. I choose to raise my family here.
I mean, that's something. Yeah, no, it's a compliment. I've met in a couple of settings where people think I either, like, live somewhere. Like, I go camping once a year up in the mountains of Tennessee, and I treat that spot like it's home. And so people are like, oh, you're a resident? You live here? Because you have
so much respect for the land, you mean?
Here year-round. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Well, yeah, I think for a community, just every community, wherever I'm at, the community is, like, the key. And so, yeah, I usually take ownership of the spaces that I'm in.
As
we just talked about Angel Park and me, like, taking ownership of.
Right. Well, we'll get to that. First of all, I just noticed some rollerbladers. People actually rollerblade. Yeah. The first time I was on this completed Beltline, which, again, we'll talk about, because I ran on this back when this was dirt, right? When I lived in Kirkwood.
Are we going to talk about where we're at?
Yeah, I mean, I assume we may not. We may not.
We're on the Beltline between just north of Lake and Irwin.
Right, so. And I do a lot of my interviews here, and it's great because it's a great spot. It's great people watching, and it's great setting to talk about Atlanta. But I know you know it beyond the back of your hand, but when this wasn't done, and this was still dirt,
yeah.
And I remember the day, like the first time I ran on it, you would know probably the date they freaking completed this, but 2013, 14 maybe?
12.
Was that this part was finished?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I moved to Kirkwood in 2010. Anyhow, the first, and I saw actual rollerbladers, and I thought those went out in like 95. I didn't know people actually rollerbladed.
Yeah, it, for some reason, what do I blame? I blame those shoes that the kids have with the wheel in the back. What do they call wheelies, I think? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. I'm going with you. I'm guessing they're called wheelies.
I blame wheelies because, like, there was a moment where people weren't buying rollerblading. Like, I lived on Miami Beach. Everybody.
They could care less. They're totally into their music.
Everybody was rollerblading on Miami Beach.
Were they twins?
No. Maybe. Everybody was rollerblading on Miami Beach. And then I moved here, and, like, there was a scene in Piedmont Park, but it wasn't anywhere near what it was on the beach.
Is it true that you set up some crazy rollerblading competition in Piedmont Park?
No.
With a bunch of gays or something?
No, I've never done that.
Didn't you know my friend? Didn't you know my buddy? Remember we had that conversation?
I mean, we would go and skate through the cones, the slaloming.
Right.
Like, that's not it. I mean, we would just go out every Sunday and set up cones and do, like, forward crisscross and backwards crisscross and 1 foot forward, and Patricia could go 1 foot backwards, and I'd go like to the top of the hill and time the light and shoot through like hauling ass. But I mean, it wasn't a competition. We were all like out enjoying the day.
Right.
It was playful.
So back to what you were saying, though, this idea of community that you really take ownership of, is this something that, why are you laughing so hard?
No, I'm remembering. So I got here in 1998, and I spent like a week or two, I don't think I've told this story recently. I like spent a week or two watching the local skate scene.
Right.
Maybe even a month. I watched for a minute, and then one day I just come skating up, like hauling ass, and I'm like, I go into like a plow, like you would do in snow, to like, you know, slide to like, a stop. And I like skate up to Patricia, and I like said, "Hi, my name is Angel. I'm your new best skater." I was so arrogant.
And tell people who Patricia is.
Patricia, she's like an amazing skater. She's probably got a dance career background, and so like she does like spinning and. She's just really good, but I was a dick. I mean, I came up and I was just like...
You thought you were the shit.
I was the shit. There was no thought. I was like, oh, I'm your new best skater. And it was, you know, talking about that taking ownership. Like, I got here and I was like, oh, there's a skate community. And I embraced the community.
So is that something that your parents taught you? It's just something that you just found you like to just get involved?
I'm sure it was, you know, family. Like, we grew up where we'd go boating, conking, clamming. You know, when my family moved to South Florida, we were, like, the fifth family unit to move into, a small subdivision. And so I had aunts, uncles, grandma, cousins on my block across the street from me, a block away, two blocks away, so I could go anywhere, and like, it was all home. It was all family, and I think I just thought, oh yeah, that's what life is. Like, everywhere you go is home and family. And then when we moved from there, you know, when I was a teenager, we moved from there out to the Everglades, and there were 400 families and 8.5 square miles, and like, my mom was the secretary to like that organization. It was the East Everglades Neighborhood Association, and we were trying to get flood protection for our 8.5 square miles. And yeah, like, I could go anywhere. Like, 8.5 square miles is a lot of land to cover.
Right.
Like 2 miles by 2 miles, that's 4 square miles. Is that right?
I'm not good at math.
Let's just say it's 2 miles by 3 miles. That'd be 6 square miles. I mean, it's 3 miles by 3 miles. Like, that's like the size of the inside of the Beltline was my neighborhood.
Right.
Growing up as a kid. And so, yeah, I've always, like, having connections to the people that are around me and close to me has always been something that's just been part of my life.
So what neighborhood were you in when you got here?
I tried a bunch of different neighborhoods. My mom lives out in Smyrna, near the intersection of Windy Hill and South Cobb.
Okay.
So I lived there for, like, a hot minute. And then...
And you were like, this is not me.
Well...
This is not my vibe.
I had moved here with a guy, and then, like, he didn't get along with my family because he was crazy. He was an alcoholic and bipolar, which I didn't really know at the time. But as we do, I made some pretty bad choices, and he and I moved in together over off of Blue Ridge in Ponce Highlands.
Right.
Right off of, like, Highland and Ponce, basically. And I lived at...
You're okay.
I lived there for, like, a year.
You're totally okay.
Lived there for like a year, and then moved out to Smyrna, and then moved back into Virginia Highlands. And it wasn't until 2003 that I moved into Midtown. And I stayed in Midtown from 2003 until 2013, so 11 years. And I've been in Southwest Atlanta. This is my fourth year living in Adair Park.
So 2003, so I was gone from Atlanta between, let's see, when was I gone? I left in 96, I came back in 05, which, is that 10 years or 12 or 20 years?
10.
97, 98, 99, 0, 1. Yeah, only 10, that's crazy. I feel like I was gone so much longer.
So there was a really important thing that happened in those 10 years, and that's that the Olympics had happened.
Right, I just left, right before that, I left.
And after the Olympics, this is Angel's theory on how Atlanta evolved.
Okay.
Rents went up because of the Olympics, and they never came back down.
Right.
And your creative class, artists, the gays, the wackos, the weirdos, all those folks, the creatives left, and there was a vacuum, and it got filled by corporate 9-to-5 drones, the corporate community, and like we lost our gay bars, we lost a ton of stuff in that decade, but that decade was really vital because the 15-year-olds in 1996 were then 25-year-olds in 2004 and 5.
Right.
And they're the Wonder Root, the young, the people that today are in their, you know, 30s, low 30s. They're the people that came into this city and it was like wide open.
Right.
Because the creatives that were just ahead of them hauled ass.
Well, like, I mean, my assumption, like, Midtown was sort of like, that was still, like, that was ground zero for gays. Like, that was gay heaven.
Yeah, but between the, you know, 40 years of gay rights from whenever that was, our first gay pride to today.
Right.
You know, if you think about 20 years ago now, so we're talking, like, the 90s.
Right.
Like, there was a lot happening where the gay community didn't have to be in its own place to be safe. Like, Atlanta was gay mecca.
Right.
For black, both the white and black community.
Right.
And because Midtown was being raised for new housing and new buildings, like, our gay bars were getting torn down for new sky rises that were going up before the crash happened.
Right.
And so, as much as, like, Midtown has always been, like, the gayborhood, in some ways, it's not really that anymore because we made it safe. We didn't buy, which was what the gays never do. They always rent. And then we make a neighborhood safe, trendy, and interesting. And then we get displaced by people that buy.
Right.
And then we move to the next place.
Well, here we are with the gazillion-dollar question, which I think we've talked about a little bit already offline. And this is the kind of stuff I want to talk to you about, and I want to talk to politicians about, and I want to talk to people that build shit about, is the replacing hood with decent and not kicking everybody out, right? So my story is I moved to Kirkwood certainly well past its bottom, but certainly before it was now, right? Kirkwood, speak about ground zero, is I moved in 2010 and moved out in 2014, and in those, like, property values not quite doubled, but a shitload, right? By now, I think they've full on doubled, right?
Yeah.
And now I live in the West End, and people are saying, oh man, the West End's coming up, and it's coming up. And we've talked about, well, I want to talk about, like, what they're building, like, on that corner, that's going to be 4 breweries and an artesian pickle place and artesian ice cream. Like, is that what the neighborhood needs? Is that what the neighborhood wants? And how can you gentrify a better word than gentrify a neighborhood and not lose everybody?
I mean, this has been the thing that I've been thinking about. I didn't realize it until just recently. I was having a conversation. And in 2004, my apartment building got torn down in Midtown for condos, and I got displaced, and I had to find a new place to live that was half the size and the same rent. So I was paying 800. I had an 800 square foot apartment on Piedmont Park on the top floor facing the park that I was paying $650 a month to live in, and I moved into a 384 square foot apartment paying $625 a month, and so, like, affordability and displacement have been a part of my Atlanta experience since, what, 14 years ago, 2004, and it's now 2017, and we're still talking about displacement and affordability, and so, and historic preservation, because my historic building was torn down to make way for a new condo building, the Piedmont Crest, that's at the corner of 12th and Piedmont today. So this conversation that you and I are having now isn't new to me and isn't new to our city and isn't new to any city. You know, you've got baby boomers that have raised families out in the suburbs.
Right.
Whose kids are moving into town now.
Right.
And as soon as their kids move into town, they put their houses up for sale and they move in with them. Or they move into town, you know, near them. And so we have an incredible amount of pressure because people want to live back in the city. And they want to do so in a place that's affordable. And you know, we can get into the weeds of it. But the I thought when I bought my house 6 years ago for $14,000 on the Beltline in Adair Park that we'd have plenty of time. There's 1,800 vacant houses. I thought, you know, we can buy one of those each, all 1,800 people that I know and care about.
Right.
And we could rehab each house. We could completely, you know, become part of the communities of the West Side without displacing a single person, without raising any property taxes, because if you only move into these vacant houses that don't have any value, the property value gets set at the purchase price of that, which was, from in my case, $14,000, and then you rehab it and you stay in it, and if you don't ever sell it, you live there forever. You know, there's no rising pressure on housing prices because you live there and you're not selling it, and so nobody gets displaced. The property taxes don't go up, and I was in a, I'm not going to curse, but...
You can curse.
I was in a fucking dream world because I was a fool. I thought, oh, yeah, capitalism won't happen over here. And, you know, 4 years later, my house is worth, you know, $350,000. And...
If I go to Zillow right now, that's what it's going to say?
No, but if I put it on the market today at, let's say, 300, I'll get bidded up to 350. Zillow still thinks it's worth $100,000.
Why do those not match up?
Because the value in the community is for something that's not even there yet. So the trail's not even open yet. We don't have restaurants. We don't have the things we think about that bring value to a community. You know, neighborhood scale grocery store that you can walk to, restaurants and bars and places of employment.
Well, let's talk about that grocery store, okay? Let's talk about the Kroger. That is less than 1 mile from my house.
Yeah.
That my wife, who shops and who knows, tells me that they have the shittiest produce. They're out of things a lot, right? You know that ain't happening at Whole Foods on Ponce, right? So
and you don't even have to compare it to the Whole Foods on Ponce. You have a brand new Kroger.
Edgewood?
That's only 4 miles away.
To about Edgewood?
Not Edgewood. One on
I-20. Crowbar.
Yeah. I call it I-20 Kroger.
Just spoken like a true ITP-er.
I call it I-20 Kroger. I-20 Kroger is, you know, spick and span and has lots of employees and has tons of people at checkout. And you know, ever, I go to both Krogers probably once a month.
Just to check it out?
No, I mean, I need to go grocery shopping, and I use... All of our grocery stores. I use Sevenanda, Publix, Whole Foods.
You just like to
Kroger.
You just like to spend money.
Each store. Each store has a little something unique that I go to, and so I love the bowl section at Sevenanda. There's a couple of things that they carry at Whole Foods, like the fancy beef jerky bars.
You are not a person with a bunch of children.
That no,
because if you have a bunch of children, shopping is not a pleasure. You get it fucking done, and it's like, all right. It's like 1,000 trips to Kroger a week, and then like the what do you call it? The Costco once every 2 months.
Did we mention I'm a gay man?
Well,
I know, but you know, when you grow up your entire life being told you can't get married and you're a second class citizen and you can't do all this other shit and you can still go to jail for even having sex with somebody, you just don't even think that like kids and marriage is something that's even possible.
And so that you're just sort of like, that's where you're at. Like even, so today you're not someone that
you spend a whole lifetime like knowing that there's something you can't do. And then like somebody like, oh, you can do it now. Like, oh, thanks for the heads up. Like I don't think that's in the cards for me, marriage or kids or all that stuff.
A long time partner without marriage? No.
I think I have a pretty good relationship with Atlanta right now. And
okay.
I don't think she gets jealous.
All right. So let's back up a little bit because I was in that Kroger. So the Kroger I'm describing is, what are the, do they call it the West End Kroger?
It's called Diamond Kroger actually because they used to sell jewelry there.
Okay. So Diamond Kroger. I don't know how everybody called it that.
The Kroger at RDA Cascade.
The Kroger at RDA Cascade.
Yeah.
I was there when they were rehabbing the
City Center Kroger.
No,
is
I think
they call it. It's on the sign out front, City Center Kroger.
But there's also City Center Kroger at Memorial out towards Stone Mountain. Those are just like the extra big Krogers,
okay.
I think.
Okay.
Much like there's like a small Walmart and a big Walmart.
I mean, they have space inside for like independent.
Right. There's like a hair lady people. And a jewel lady. Anyway, what I was saying was when they were rehabbing, quote unquote, that Kroger and made the produce section slightly less shitty than it is now, I talked to these two guys and they seemed genuinely interested in my concerns.
Yeah.
Like I was like, hey, why you run out of shit? This isn't okay. And they were very, like, I didn't think they were blowing me off. I felt like they were legitimately like, yeah, man, that's not cool. But nothing really changes. Because poor people shop there, so who gives a fuck about them? Can they be that cold?
Yes. I mean, again, capitalism, if the numbers don't show, you know, if the numbers don't show that they need to give a damn, then they don't. And so if you think about how much purchasing happens at, you know, Edgewood, the old Murder Kroger, I-20 Kroger.
Can we have a moment of silence for the old Murder Kroger? Just
that new building, 725 Ponce, is going to be outstanding. I just did a tour with Jim that's running the construction project. Wow. I mean, like, stunning. I know we're getting off topic, but just 1 minute of, like, 12-story office building, all the parking's underground, the Kroger's going to face the Beltline. We have to wait till January of 2019 for it to open, but it's going to be remarkable.
Well, no, it's totally fine to jump all over the place.
But going back to our Kroger on the west side, yeah, I mean, if I shop there, I mean, it's rough, you know, like
they run out of things like bread.
There's never cashiers out front. If you're there overnight, then like the self-service line is like 10 deep with people having like grocery carts full of stuff using the self-checkout, which is not very efficient. And yeah, it's a disaster.
That to me appears to be a sociological issue.
Have you been to the Big Bear since it reopened?
No.
Why not?
The Big Bear
is like a quarter mile from your house.
My wife has.
You can like walk out your front door and fall into it.
I think I asked my wife, have you been there? And she said, yeah, their blah, blah section is good. But other than that, it's not very good. And it's too overpriced maybe because they don't get as much stuff as a Big Bear.
No, it's like super cheap. And their produce is almost like DeKalb Farmers Market value produce price-wise.
Okay, we got to get my wife to weigh in on that.
The produce, I mean, it's not a large selection, but like what they do have is incredibly reasonable.
But here's what I was saying.
So we have two grocery stores in our community. One's a full-service grocery store that's shitty as fuck. And the other's a Big Bear.
Oh.
Small, very convenient, has all the staples you need. And if we don't frequent those, how do we expect them to get better? I mean, we can just complain about them being bad.
Right.
But we got to walk in there every day and be participants. To be able to, like, then have the credential or the credit to be like, this can't work. This has to get better. If we only go in there, like, once a month and we just complain about it, kind of on the periphery.
Did you see the latest that I just saw today? The planet of the future on where Solvej is going to be? Did you see that?
No.
Pulled us out. While we're talking. But while we're talking, what about the West End Mall? Has there ever been any talks of like making that worth a shit?
I mean, so the West End Mall is a really interesting thing to talk about. So when we think about Atlantic Station, we think like tons of money coming in, all these high price points of everything in there. There was a meeting that the city had in the last 2 or 3 years that talked about the West End Mall. And the West End Business District. So we have an Ace Hardware. We have 2 or 3 banks. We have a print shop. We have, you know, a ton of restaurants.
Can I quick interruption?
Sure.
That Ace Hardware is the best fucking service I've ever had in my life.
Ace Hardware in general. I'm probably going to bike up to the Ace Hardware on Howell.
But it's certainly a better experience than Lowe's, where I walk in, no matter what time of day, no matter how busy, somebody says, how can I help you? And then will walk me over to anything I need. And, like, how do I build this? How do I make that? It's like how shopping used to be. Small town like it used to be.
I'm going to be wrong with these numbers a little bit, but it's something like the West End Business District brings in like $180 million a year in revenue, and Atlantic Station only brings in like $200 million a
Get
year
out.
In revenue. No, I'm serious.
My mouth is agape if you can't see on this podcast.
If you, because what we don't think about is that West End Business District goes all the way down to Oglethorpe. You have the post office, you have a Bank of America down there, you have the... You know, you have a MARTA station there, the West End MARTA station. It's a regional draw. People are coming in, shopping in all of those streets. That district is probably like 6 blocks by 6 blocks wide. It's not just the mall.
Right.
And they're getting, it's regional transit. Like we have a, you know, people are coming up using West End MARTA station to get to all of that stuff. A grocery store. There's like those other stores that are not thrift stores, but like it used to be. Is there still a Goodwill there? Is there a Goodwill there?
Yes.
There's a Goodwill there. There's another store that's Goodwill-like. There's
why is nobody
the
open?
Krispy Kreme is
why,
there.
Why is nobody opened a spot where the Wing Spot was? That's like a corner lot. You prime real estate. Crave-On Wings?
I never ate those wings. I go to the Chinese place like once every other week.
We eat the Chinese place.
Is amazing.
We also like
there's
the Wing
like
place.
Two pizza places over there. Bakari, and they do hookah stuff. And then there's the other place over there by CVS. There's a 24-hour CVS there. I mean, there's stuff there.
The CVS that, is probably doing a big chunk of that business.
But there's business there that Atlantic Station can't touch. If you think about, again, grand scheme of things. I was blown away by the numbers. I was like, that's impossible. But again, if you break every one of those small businesses down and they're bringing in business from sunup to sundown. You know, I haven't done an independent audit myself to see if that's true or not, but it makes sense. You know, the Atlantic Station district isn't really that big and it's all, you know, one story. And it's what, 5 or 6 blocks? Whereas West End's like 10, 12 blocks. And you've got people coming in from the region to use it.
I always assume that those people all live there, but now that I think about it, I don't know where they're living, I guess. Everybody that I see standing around on the corners or anybody that's getting on and off the train.
I mean, if we broke down how many buses use the West End as their hub, there's probably a lot of people that are coming in and use that community. It's a huge resource. And we definitely, everybody else, we probably underestimate how much of an impact it has in that community and how important it is for that community.
Right. Well, I also, when we first moved there, I'm like, I want to support the hood. I want to eat at these places. And unfortunately, not a lot of them, like, do I want to, because just for me, it's like a healthy choice. Like, Q-Time is awesome, but like, not really for the...
Do you eat at Tisselli's? Tisselli's Raw Reality is probably the best vegan restaurant we have in the city.
I think we had this argument where I said I'm all about Soul Veg, and you said Tisselli was better. I think Soul Veg is the bomb. People come visit me from out of town, I say, you must go to Soul Veg.
But it's two different kinds of food. I mean, they are cooking at Soul Veg, and they're not cooking at Tisselli's. So that's, I mean, this we're talking two different kinds of food. But we have healthy options. They cost a little more.
But I'd like to mix it up. I can't go to Soul Veg every night, and right. I don't want to go to fucking Wendy's either.
Have you been to Sicily's?
I have been to Sicily a couple of times. The wait's a little long. It's a little pricier than I think, than
yeah.
I like.
Yeah. No, those are both true statements.
But again, remember, I'm a guy with 3 kids, so like that's kind of where I'm thinking, right? I've gone to that Subway a handful of times. My son likes Subway, but I can't.
What Subway?
The Subway that's right there next to the mall thing that has the hair thing. There's.
We have a Subway closer to my house.
There's one across from McDonald's. Yeah, it's like across from McDonald's. I'm saying McDonald's, like, that's how I really say it. That's not how I say it.
McDonald's.
So back to the West End, that piece of property owned by Lee and White that they clearly want to create this pointing to the East Side Beltline. And it's four breweries and the hipster ice cream place. And again, like, are those places going to survive? Put it this way. Let me ask you this. Are the White families hiding and I don't see them, but they're going to go to those places? Oh, what's the name of the new spot that you went to? The bar you went
Lean
to?
Lean Draft House. Lean Draft House. Let's talk about Lean Draft House for a minute.
Great. Just opened.
Lean Draft House has only been open for 2 or 3 weeks now. So we're talking late June 2017. Lean Draft House has only been open for 2 or 3 weeks and is filling in the gap that we have been desperate for. So I've been in on the West Side now for 6 years, and I get a little burnt out of my food options because you go to them a lot because there's not a whole lot of them. So they're doing tacos, and they range in price from $3.50 to $4. And they're tasty as heck. I'd love for them to be maybe a dollar cheaper. We get spoiled by like Prison Taco and Taco Joint right here south of us, Bell Street Burrito. Like, they're probably the same price point, but at Bell Street you get like a taco and a side of chips
right.
for like $3 or $4.
Right.
And here you're just getting a taco. I think they're going to expand their menu and there'll be a little working out of the kinks. But you get a draft beer that's local in a glass container that ranges in price from $5 to $7. And you get a taco, so you're talking like $11 for a beer. As cheap as $9 for a beer and a taco. Or $11 for a beer and a taco, which is just a little bit higher than I want to pay. But the most important thing is that clientele in there is the community as represented. So Atlanta's 55% black, and the West Side might be all black or mostly black. But when you walk into Lean Draft House, it's 50-50.
So is it kind of like – is it? No, you're good, dude. Is it kind of like – he's a movie guy. He's trying to be quiet for sound. Holding for sound. Is it kind of like El Mariachi, where it's like I could take my kids during the day, but it's more like a bar at night?
No. It's fully exactly what you want it to be. It's a neighborhood joint. Like, they open at 5. They're open from 5 to 11 right now. And you go in, and you can sit at the bar. You can sit at a table, and they have waitresses that come out, servers that come out. And it's amazing. And the owner's there, and he's making sure you're happy and wants to know if there's anything that they need to have. To make it more appealing. There's not a minute that you're not in there that you don't know. I mean, you know, I'm really engaged in my Southwest Atlanta community. And so, like, I know my West End neighbors, my Westview neighbors, my Adair Park neighbors. And there's not a time I'm in there, like, at least twice a week right now. And every time I go in, I'm giving neighbors hugs because it's where the neighborhood is.
So that's what we need, spots like that.
We've got them. I'd love the price point to be like I think about when I go to Victory and like you can get a beer and a sandwich with a side of chips for like $10, and you're like, yeah, I'll get some for my friend, and like, and then you hold on.
This is why I want to interview this guy. He knows everybody in the city.
And then you you know, when you're at, like, Victory and then you get to, like, buy a beer and a sandwich for your friend and you're still under $20. Whereas at this place, when you do that, you're at $30.
Right.
With
so,
tip.
Right.
You know?
So it's so funny because when I went to the Grind, right, at the new Victory, and I'm like, sandwiches are $4. Hey, friend, you want a sandwich? Like,
yeah.
It's hard not to. Right. Say to my friend Charles really quickly. Hey, Charles, this is Angel.
Hey, Charles. Pleasure.
So,
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good.
So he's on my podcast. He's one of the first guys I thought of to do one about Atlanta because he's like everybody knows Angel by first name. He's like Prince or Madonna, Angel.
Okay.
I knew you would recognize, like, if I just sitting out here, like, people like, hey, he's one of those dudes. So Charles is a filmmaker.
Yeah. All right, on.
I'm looking forward to doing it.
So shoot me an email back. All right.
Well, I'm letting you know now.
We're doing it. All right, cool. All right. Well, I got a little scheduler. Just because it's super easy, and then you pick it, and then it locks it in. Yeah, I'll email you back since you're saying yes. All right, thanks, dude. Good to see you. We'll talk soon. Checking your phone.
Somebody that's trying to buy a house in my community wants some help, and I'm just letting him know that I'll be free after you and I are done talking, and then I can help him find a house in Southwest Atlanta.
This is what I love about you. Like, if I see you on any given day, I'm like, what are you doing today? Well, I mean, these friends over here at this bar, then there's a play going on over here that my friends are putting on, and then I'm going to swing by. I'm like, you're like, you really
All that came out of necessity. So there was a time that I was living on a $5 a day budget, and so I had to know all the free stuff that was going on and all the places where there was going to be food to, like, hit and eat from. And so I think part of, like, me, I definitely, you know, engaging in all things community is important, but also knowing where all the free stuff's going on is also very important.
Are we allowed to talk about what you do for a day job?
Yeah, I mean, I work for CSX. I'm a freight train engineer and conductor for CSX Railroad, and my territory is from Atlanta to Athens to Gainesville, Georgia.
And how does one get into that line of work?
It was a fluke. It fell out of the sky. I was a baggage handler for 12 years with the airline, U.S. Airways, and 37 of us were getting laid off together back in March of 2005. And we were all networking for 6 weeks because we had 6 weeks before we were all going to be laid off. And one of my airline guys had neighbors in South Atlanta, like Griffin, Jonesboro, South Atlanta, South Metro Atlanta, that were railroaders, and they were telling them they're hiring like crazy. The economy was taking off, roaring. They couldn't hire enough people. And it was a seamless transition, working outdoors, large equipment, security clearance. Yeah, it was a seamless transition from the airline to the railroad.
Because it's definitely like a unique gig, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, driving a freight train is something we don't think about people doing anymore.
Right.
Because trains have been, you know, as we've built roads and interstates, those roads and interstates go over and under the train.
Right.
So for the most part, we don't piss people off a lot right. as a train driver. Yeah, they're just not out of sight, out of mind. So we don't think about that as an important thing that makes our economy move. But the railroad is like, when the economy is about to tank, we know 6 months ahead. And when it's about to take off, we also know. We're like a leading indicator, because once those raw materials stop moving, we're the ones that feel it first.
Right.
And when they start moving again, we feel it first.
So you are even more closely connected with this whole, like, cities. Like we always say, like every city wants this. Oh, people are moving back in town again because they all left with white flight. And you're specifically connected to this concept of transport. And like with Atlanta, like the whole track to trail thing that many cities are doing. You're just like most people don't have that unique perspective.
I mean, I started going to Beltline meetings in 2004. And in 2005, I started working for the railroad. And yeah, like I've had a chance to see it actually happening from the vantage point of the rail. And so, like, you know, my trains go underneath downtown, underneath CNN, underground, or at grade with underground. Anyways, underground and down to cab through around the backside of Piedmont Hospital, through Emory, out through Tucker. Like, I've had a chance to see a lot of the change happened from a completely different vantage point / perspective than most Atlantans.
So you put on an engineer's hat?
I mean, I have one. I do have a cap that I put on when I'm working in the sun to protect my face.
And you drive that fucker? I mean, you push go and drive the train? Like, I'm trying to just give people a visual image of like what
your
job is.
Yeah, I mean, so the freight trains, modern freight trains, run up to 2 miles long. They can weigh up to 20,000 tons, which is 40 million pounds. And we're moving all the raw goods of the country around the country 24 hours a day. I think we'd kind of take 2 days off, Christmas and Thanksgiving, where they kind of shut down the railroad so that people can have time off with their families and not call in sick. But otherwise, we're a 24-hour operation running every day of the week.
So when you talk about security, so when stuff comes off of, I'm guessing, mostly comes off of boats?
No, I mean, most of what we move are the raw goods of the country. So like your cement, lumber, steel, scrap.
Sugar?
Sugar, yeah. That's
coal?
Coal.
And
I mean, there's the containers you're talking about, they come off of ships. That's also CSX Railroad, but that's intermodal, and there's two different kinds of trains. There's intermodal trains, and there's general merchandise trains, and so...
Who owns the railroads these days?
The railroads own the railroad. I mean, it's all different. So some lines are owned by the state, and the state leases it to the railroad, long-term leases, and some of the railroad is owned by the railroad. And, you know, it's each railroad owns their own railroad, and sometimes we share lines, but most of the times we don't. So Norfolk Southern has their own tracks, and CSX has 21,000 miles of track, mostly on this side of the Mississippi, the east coast side of the Mississippi.
So who's getting rich off the railroads these days?
I mean, shareholders, employees.
They're publicly traded companies?
They're publicly traded
There's
companies.
No giant, like,
there's
barons?
No, there's no monopoly. If we think of the game Monopoly with the Reading Railroad, like, those times.
Those
I
are
mean,
over.
We're still monopolies in that, like, the simplest way, I guess we're not a monopoly, just in case I don't want to get in trouble at work. But if you think about, like, UPS and FedEx, for example.
Okay.
If they're traveling on a road, either of them can use that road to deliver to you.
Right.
But if you're a CSX customer on CSX rail and you don't like CSX service, like, Norfolk Southern can't come and deliver that freight to you. You've got to move your company over to Norfolk Southern Rail to get that product delivered to you. So it's different in that way, because the rails aren't like our roads that are all public.
Right.
The rails are all private, and so they are still run that way. And so CSX delivers to customers along their rail line, and they're all CSX customers. And Norfolk Southern has that same deal with all their customers on their rail.
How old are most of the lines, and how often do they need to be, like, repaired or replaced?
I mean, here in Atlanta, you know, our lines date back to the 1840s when Atlanta was set up as terminus. And they get, I mean, you can go out and rail probably gets, depending on how much it gets used, it can get replaced anywhere from every 5 to 10 years or every 30 to 40 years. That south side of the Beltline, you know, it was servicing some very few local customers. And you can look out on the side of the rail and see the date of that, when that rail was last made. And some of the rail that's on the south side of the, that's still CSX property, so don't trespass, is like dates from the 40s.
What? So speaking of which, what are those guys like? I saw guys like mining for like copper or something out there.
What?
Where? Homeless guys?
What? No.
Yeah, between.
I mean, maybe
after tetanus and before Glenwood, there's like some areas where they're like mining for. They're like, oh, we're mining for copper. There's all this copper. Is it copper? What the hell are they looking for?
I don't know.
You're not going to get the railroad in trouble. These are what bums are doing.
I don't know.
You seriously don't know what I'm talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about. But I know the area that you're talking about, the, you know, the south side trail.
There's like a bus or a car under the kudzu over there. You can see it like in the winter, and then it grows back. I can't believe you don't know what I'm talking about. I've seen guys there a couple times, and one time I said, well, what are you guys doing?
They're like, there was an abandoned City of Atlanta maintenance facility that people were going in and stripping for raw goods.
But they were like digging, like they were like mining for it, like they were like looking.
Somebody should probably call the railroad and let them know.
You're not gonna get in trouble for this, dude.
No, I'm saying I've never seen anybody mining for.
Okay,
anything.
I'm gonna take a picture next time.
We should go take a little adventure.
So we've talked about this offline again, but so that piece, right?
That Southside Trail,
right?
Future Southside Trail.
That it's not going to be touched for a long time because whoever owns it, like, they acknowledge that it exists, but they got to find the file somewhere, didn't you?
I mean, CSX owns it.
Right.
They've ran trains on it as recently as 3 years ago.
Really?
When I was rehabbing my house.
You saw trains.
I've been in my house 4 years.
And you saw a train on it.
And while I was rehabbing my house, I would see trains using that line.
Okay.
And so it hasn't, you know, obviously there's no trains on it now because it's covered in kudzu. And so you could tell that no trains have been on it because they would have to, like, the kudzu would be cut. And it hasn't
right.
been cut from the trains going over the rail. But it's entirely up to CSX whenever they decide to sell it or not sell it or put it back in use or whatever.
But is the Beltline, whatever organization that is, you could probably know, actually.
I was at a meeting last night. And a Beltline meeting last night, and they specifically said that they are not in negotiations, but they are in talks.
Because eventually they will.
Because they can't talk about a real estate deal. It's just Beltline's stance is that they can't talk about active real estate deals.
Got it.
And so they were nice enough to say that they're talking to CSX, but that they are not in negotiations.
Okay.
And I, as a freight train engineer and conductor for CSX, I'm not part of the real estate part of the company, so I have no clue what that part of the company is doing in that way.
Right. So let's talk about what they have done. So this to Piedmont is what, is 3 miles?
So we're talking about the Beltline on the Eastside Trail now, and we're pointing to Lake in Irwin, which is the southern end of the current Beltline that we think of as the Eastside Trail, and that's only 2 miles long from Lake in Irwin down near
to the park,
Croc Street Market, up to Piedmont Park at Monroe.
It's only two.
Only 2 miles.
They're adding, what is that, another quarter mile?
We're about to add a half mile from, it's just short of a half mile, from Irwin down to Edgewood. And then the Edgewood to DeKalb section will be built out with that 670, 690 DeKalb Ave address site that they're calling Edge, because it's on the edge of Emmett Park and Fourth Ward, and it's being built by North American Properties. And they just had their groundbreaking last week.
But that's just, that's not.
And then it'll continue down Wiley. And then it'll continue.
But no, it currently goes down Wiley, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not open yet. It's still under construction.
Right, but they've painted the walls all pretty, and it looks nice.
Yeah.
And it goes Wiley down to
Kirkwood. And it stops at Kirkwood, and it doesn't go all the way to Memorial because we need another $6 million to build the section Kirkwood and Memorial, because we need a new bridge there.
But you don't. But what about the section that's just the, it's just dirt, I think they call it an extension now. If you go right at Stein Steel, what's it called?
So Stein Steel.
Stein
so
Steel, if you go right there.
That's so the trail's built between Stein Steel and Kirkwood.
Right.
There's a trail there now.
Right, but they're going to.
Concrete.
There's a concrete trail there now?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I'm. So there's.
Jason to Stein Steel, that trail.
Is done.
Is essentially finished.
But can I run on it legally today or no?
It's not open because it's under construction.
Okay. Wow. I gotta run this section.
You can run on it illegally.
Okay. I need to illegally run on this section sometime soon and check it out.
You haven't seen the concrete between Kirkwood and
I've seen this. Wiley? I've seen this.
It's all the way to Kirkwood.
Color me surprised. So that plus what's just gotten built over where we live, it's still not even half the thing, though.
Yeah, so 2 miles of the Eastside Trail currently. Another mile coming online, mile and a half. With the Eastside Trail extension south, and then the 3 miles on my side of town, our side of town, excuse me, is 3, 2, 1.5. That's 6.5 miles. And in corridor, even though we talk about a 22-mile loop, in corridor it's only 19.57 miles. So we'll have 6.5 miles of 19.5 miles.
So it's a third.
Yeah.
Almost.
We're at a third.
Right. Do you even count that north side piece, or is that just going to be?
Well, those are like spur trails.
That's what I mean. That's a spur. That's right. Not going to be part of it. The north side, current north side piece.
Correct.
Okay. Thought so.
Correct, maybe.
Okay.
I mean, the trail's going to veer away from the active rail line on the north side and run along Peachtree Creek. And so that north side trail section isn't Peachtree Creek. It's Tanner Creek. So you are correct. That north side trail section probably isn't part of the full trail that we think of when we think of the Beltline.
Right. Because I found that by accident once.
Yeah.
When I was illegally running on over that track, I was like, oh, cool, what's that? And it was like, it was not even a mile, but yeah. It's, like I said, it feels like a spur-ish.
Yeah.
Do you know, I know, like, this probably doesn't make sense to anybody but us, but on the new piece between my house and Washington Park, where it kind of S's around. It's a nice little curve. There's like some piece of a bridge that's just sitting there on the side. Yeah. What is that going to go to?
So they had a volunteer project, and they were building a couple of like different things. Like there actually is going to be like a little offshoot trail through that wooded section off of, it's between Fair Street and it's in between Fair Street and MLK, and there's a wavy S section that's beautiful through some wooded. It's going to blow everybody's mind once you start getting on the West Side Trail once it opens in September of 2017. But there's a they started a project, they got rained on, and they stopped. So they were supposed to build some stairs up to an access point that a neighborhood uses, and they were supposed to build that bridgey thing, and they were supposed to finish putting some sod down, and none of that got finished because they got rained on. So they're actively trying to figure out how they get those things done with limited dollars now.
The lights that I see on there
are beautiful. They're on at my section.
They're on?
Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask you, is how soon, because right over by rat tunnels where I saw them, how soon, are they solar powered?
No, they're not solar panels. They're LED. And the story is that they're supposed to run, you know, all night, but they're going to have dimmers on them so that if nobody's on the trail, they're
it's
at
lighter.
A lighter light, less light.
And then as you
and
go
then as you
them.
Run under them, they brighten.
Right.
To save energy.
That's great. Yeah. Because it took them not doing that here to go, oh, people might need that at light when it's not summer and gets lighter.
Mayor Kasim Reed has said any new section of Beltline that gets built will have lighting built.
But why would they not figure that out the first time around?
We didn't have any money. So the East Side Trail is built at $6 million a mile. We're building the West Side Trail at $15 million a mile. And so when you ask why doesn't the East Side Trail have access at every street, like Highland and North and Ralph McGill, which we do now, and Pont, it's because we didn't have any money. And why doesn't the East Side Trail have lighting? It's because we don't have any money. And actually, the East Side Trail gets a lot of water, and the water isn't dealt with because when the East Side Trail was built in 2012, the city didn't have an ordinance that every project built in the city had to deal with its first inch of water. And so when we built the East Side Trail, we built one bridge at Ralph McGill for pedestrians, and it didn't have any access. And we didn't build any other access points. Maybe you could consider the ramp that goes up to Freedom Parkway Trail an access point. But there were no ramps or stairs on a big scale. The West Side Trail has all the access. So there's a ramp at MLK. We dip down to the neighborhood at Stafford. We dip down to the neighborhood at Fair, so there's access points there. There's a ramp at Lucille. There's a ramp at RDA. There's a ramp at Lawton. There's going to be a ramp at Lee. And we meet the neighborhood at Adair Park at University. So, like, the access that we're getting on 3 miles is, like, 14 access points over 3 miles, whereas on the East Side Trail, if you count Magruder and John Wesley Dobbs and Greenwood and Freedom, there's like and Angier Springs, there's like 5 access points over 2 miles.
Right, and they all came in slowly.
Well, those came in at the same time as construction.
Well, I feel like even at the Kroger over there,
new ones have been added since. But we built the East Side Trail at a low price point because we just built the trail kind of proof of concept. Like, let's build it, see if somebody will come out here and use it. And I think we're at like 1.6, 1.8 million users a year now on the East Side Trail. So, like, you know, over 10,000 people on a weekend, on a day of, you know, nice weather, as you know, because you can't walk on it on a Saturday or Sunday that's nice weather. You know, we've got over, you know, a million, nearly 2 million people using the East Side Trail. We need to build more trails, not just Beltline, not just West Side Trail, South Side Trail, but we need to build the 400 Trail going through Buckhead. We need to build the Proctor Creek Trail going out towards Northwest Atlanta. We need to build all the trails so that people don't feel like this is the only trail they can come and bike on and be safe and not squashed by a car because there's no cars on it.
Right, but in the burbs, like, there's a park, like, I feel like on every corner. There's like a lot of big
parks.
There's
nowhere you can bike for 2 miles without meeting a car anywhere except for Silver Comet. And even there, you have to cross cars.
Right.
And you get long stretches where you don't cross cars. And eventually the Beltline will be Silver Comet-like in that you will cross cars every 2 or 3 miles. But
there's nothing interesting about the Comet Trail. I mean, there's no...
Well, there's no personality
to it.
There's no Croc Street Market. There's no Pont City Market. There's no Rathburn Steak. There's no Ladybird.
All right.
Those things aren't on the Silver Comet Trail.
Here we are, back to the socioeconomic piece. I had a guy who lives over by Pont City Market, and he said, I went into Pont City Market, and I did not see a lot of places that where I would want to eat or shop. He's like a young guy, late 20s, early 30s.
Superpan is amazing and affordable. So just for the record.
I didn't know that's where it was. I know the old one.
No, they're in Ponce City Market.
Okay.
Hector, I think that's the only place I eat at Ponce City Market.
But do you know what I'm saying? Like, he's like, yeah, this isn't for me. He says it feels to me like they built this for the people coming in from the burbs, not for the people who live here.
So the city's population is going to double or triple, we say. The city of Atlanta's population is going to double or triple. So we need stuff for everybody.
By what year?
Like in the next 15, 20 years.
Okay.
And so,
hello.
You know, once the coast starts to flood and everybody from the coast starts coming inland.
When California sinks into the ocean.
The coasts are going to flood way before California sinks into the ocean. I mean, sea level rise. Like, New Orleans, Miami, Jacksonville, all those places, sea level rise happens. Savannah, Charleston, where are they going to go? They're going to come here to Atlanta.
When is Savannah going to be underwater?
I haven't looked at the last update. But seriously, so when we say, like, we don't think these things are being built for us, we need things built for everybody. So we have a Victory. We have a Bell Street Burrito. We have a lot of shops in Croc Street Market that are affordable that you can eat at every day without breaking the bank. Are things being built at Ponce City Market that you and I may not go to every day with our income and you with your kids and me without any kids? Sure, but that doesn't mean that they're not, that people aren't in there using them. So the notion that, like, well, I don't like a thing because it's being built for people, not me, like, don't go. And by the way, if enough people don't go, then those places will fail and other places will come in that will have to succeed.
Here's another piece that I often...
It's called capitalism. we live in a community, in a society that's built on this notion of if you have enough money, you go there. And if you don't have enough money, you don't go there. And do we need to provide protection for people against capitalism? Of course. The city should be spending hundreds of millions of dollars on affordability, of which it's spending none right now. And we can't be putting it all on the back of Beltline to build affordable housing, because the Beltline is responsible for a project that's only, you know, 8% of the land of the city. The other 92% of the land of the city, that's the city's responsibility. And the city should be spending hundreds of millions of dollars to make sure we have diverse communities that are affordable.
And is that what they're actually doing, though?
We, the taxpayers, need to be demanding it. And they're not. They're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on the Hawks. I mean, I think the mayor just announced $150 million being spent to rehab the new stadium for the Hawks, a new arena for the Hawks. We're spending $40 million to build a new parking deck in Grant Park. We're spending $20 million to build a new pedestrian bridge for the new Falcon Stadium.
We're not building that bridge.
We are building that with City of Atlanta dollars. City of Atlanta tax dollars.
Do you know who cares about the Hawks?
The point isn't Hawks or Falcons or parking decks or bridges. The point is, if we can be creative with finding funding for those things, we need to be just as creative.
All right. Well, see, this is
for finding funding for people. But so the parking. So I'm gonna get a little. I'm getting loud. So that parking deck in Grant Park, we're spending $40,000 to house a car. How can we not spend $40,000 to house people? Where's the disconnect? So
where's this parking deck gonna be?
In Grant Park, they're getting a brand new parking deck in Grant Park.
Next to the park.
In the park.
Inside the park.
Yeah, just like we had a parking deck built in Piedmont Park, the, you know, 1 acre of land on a hillside, on unused property, blah, blah, blah. We're getting a brand new parking deck, but we, the taxpayers, are paying for it, $40 million.
Okay, so this is where I need someone like you, who's passionate.
Sorry, I'm going to calm down now. Sorry.
You don't need to calm down. I'm having you on here for who you are. Do you need to go in a second?
No, we're good.
I have you on here because of this. So... But not if you're going to look at your, not if you're going to check your emails, though.
Let me just make sure.
This is why.
So somebody's asking if I need to eat. And I do need to eat because I'm starving.
But if you were on mute right now and you told them when you were done, it would still be fine. Listen, I've got a lot of stuff to do. I'm on airplane, right. Goddammit. I get very. I'm going to stand up and stretch. I get very. What do you call it? What's the word? Lethargic. What's the word, like lethargic?
Complacent,
because we built this new dome, right? not even 30 years ago, right? It improved nothing, right? They didn't improve the neighborhood. They didn't add things. And now we're building this fucking transformer. And why are they doing that? Because that's what they want to do. Just like whoever, told you, just like whoever wanted to make money near SunTrust Park is making that money, right? And whoever can shake whoever's hand to go, you know what? I'm going to build my shit right next to this new thing. And guess what? We're all going to get rich. And I feel like that's what happens every single time. And and downtown still sucks.
Was there a question in there?
How does one person, myself, who wants to maybe make a difference for my family who does live in the city, when I just watch things get built and people and my wife was like on the front lines with the school shit and got fucked over by APS over and over again.
So you know we have an election coming up in the city of Atlanta.
Except guess what happens to every politician ever? They get in and they become part of the problem.
I mean, so politicians are people. Like if I were to run for office, I would be a politician whose name would be Angel Poventude, and I would not. Like the city would be my responsibility, the whole city, including the people that live here, and not just corporate city, but people city. And we have to elect people that will care about people Atlanta and not just corporate Atlanta. I mean, we need both. We need, you know, if Arthur Blank wants to spend $1.3 billion of his own dollars to build a $1.5 billion stadium, I guess we let him do that because that's what just happened. You know, the fact that $200 million of the city's money, at least, went to build that stadium and not to affordable housing, that's a concern, you know. If you had a question to ask with your...
What can we do? And you said there's an election.
With your mini rant.
There's an election coming up.
It's to say that, you know, so some statistics. 2% of Americans don't own TVs. So that means the other 98% of Americans are owning TVs and watching TV. The average American watches 35 hours of TV a week. So if you want to think about the citizenry that's not engaged right now on a local, regional, national level, that's your audience. Those are the people that we need to be talking to. In the city of Atlanta, 25% of the city volunteers. The other 75% are watching 35 hours a week of TV. You know, these are just like simple stats to think about.
Have you seen The Wire?
No. Okay. I've never seen it.
It's really good.
I've heard. But have you seen your city council meetings? Or your neighborhood meetings?
See, there you go.
Or the people that are running for office? Because those people are way more important than The Wire. And they're actually way more entertaining. I guess I can't say that because I've never seen The Wire. But I'm telling you, a neighborhood meeting or a city hall meeting.
I got involved when I was in Kirkwood.
But it's not just once. I mean, you don't just watch The Wire 1 week back.
I spent a year as the treasurer.
So if The Wire's on for like, I'm going to guess 7 seasons.
It's like 5, but okay.
But like, I'm pleading here.
I'm
pleading
you.
With the however many people are listening to us right now.
Right.
Like,
it will be thousands. At the moment, it's just you and me, but it will be thousands.
I mean, how can we expect things to get better if you don't put any time into it?
Are you going to run for something?
I mean, not this cycle, but 8 years ago, I thought about running for something. And I asked my mom, like, should I run for something? And she said, aren't you doing that already? And so, like, I'm probably doing my part enough and to take a pay cut. So I get to be Angel independent and make a really good living at the railroad and have a lot of free time. And I could choose to run for office and take a pay cut and then not only be responsible for the things I'm passionate about, but on council, you've got a district of like 32 to 36,000 people, and you have to be responsible for what each and every one of those people are passionate about while taking in the considerations of the whole city. So if and when I do run for office, that's the kind of decision I have to make to take on that responsibility. and hopefully everyone that's running for office currently, whether it's city councilor or mayor or school board or county, those are the choices that they're making. But more importantly, the 500,000 residents of the city of Atlanta need to be investing in their city, in their community, spending time, going to meetings, and giving a damn. Because if they don't, then how do they expect things to get better without participating?
I agree. And I am guilty of being the, what do you call it, that word that we said a minute ago?
Complacent.
The complacent lot. I do think what you just said, though, about the I'm doing better job just being me, I think that's a little playing a little small for you. Because I think you are someone that could affect change, like in an office.
But I'm doing, well, I'm not
saying you're not now.
Right.
I'm saying that I think you could, because I'm a guy that goes, well, I know about that guy, and I would tell 10, 20, 100 people to vote for that guy. Because you've bothered to get to know me the first time I went by your house, having no fucking clue who I was.
Well, you were trespassing in my backyard. You were trespassing on my belt line that wasn't built yet.
But you know what I'm saying? You bothered to get to know me,
Well,
not because you wanted anything from me, but because you thought it was a good idea to say hey to some neighbor.
The whole reason I tell Facebook what I'm doing every day isn't because I want everyone to know how amazing I am. I want everyone to know, like, these are things that are going on and you should be doing them too. And so when I say I'm going to the Grant Park Farmers Market, I'm going to this art event, I'm going to this festival, it's not because, I mean, sure, I want my friends to know where I'm at and come and hang out with me, but more importantly, there's 4,500 people on my Facebook page right now. Like, I want them to know that these are things happening around them, and I want them to be a part of them, because I want them to go to the meeting and to start to give a damn. I want them to go to the festival or to the market and support their local farmer and meet their neighbors and become part of this community. It's the only reason I posted on Facebook today, like, the eclipse is coming up on August 21st. I want people from this community to come with me and, like, stand in the darkness for 2 minutes and 40 seconds and be awed by nature.
That's awesome. When is that again?
August 21st.
All right, I'll pay close attention. I'll come do that with you.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
What do you got going on the rest of the day? Meeting somebody in your neighborhood to show them how to buy a house?
There's somebody that actually I met through, it's really amazing, his name's Zach. And I met him as a couch surfer. He surfed my couch when I was living in Midtown in my apartment. He lived in Jacksonville at the time. He's since moved up here and become a firefighter and is now a firefighter for the city of Atlanta. And is looking for a house in the city where he can, like, put down some roots. And he's, like, sending me messages on texting, like, hey, I'd love to connect, because I saw him at my house, because I was, before I came over here to meet you, I was hammering in a stake to support a tree that was leaning in front of a house that a friend of mine just bought on my block. And he was with his girlfriend and a realtor on my street, and I would chatted with him, and then I raced over here, which is why I was 3 minutes late, because I was talking to him for a minute, and he wants to connect and, like, have some food and talk about, you know, whether it's the Pittsburgh neighborhood or the Adair Park neighborhood or the Washington Park neighborhood, like, what neighborhood he's going to settle down in, because he wants to be part of our city. But he's a firefighter and doesn't have a whole lot of money because we don't pay them anything, and, you know, it's tough for him to find a house in a...
Are you buying other property?
No, I mean, I talk to people daily and help them find properties.
That's not something you want to do with your disposable income?
I don't have disposable income. I mean, I had to take out 2-3 401k loans, a credit card that I'm still paying off, in order to make the house happen, including on top of the mortgage. And I'm still servicing that debt. Like, I'm not debt free. I'm, like, mortgage, credit card, and 2 401k loans. I was able to pay one of the three off, but yeah, I mean, I'd love to buy another property in the city, but I would never buy something that is run down and sit on it, because I'd shoot myself. Like,
no, not
I want
sit
to shoot
on it,
people
but,
that are doing that now.
No, but make it better and rent it out in the meantime.
Yeah, but it costs money to make things better. And
right.
My disposable income currently is being used to service the debt of my house.
Got it. So,
that's beyond the mortgage.
But even people that buy houses, rather than buy it and sit on it, wouldn't it be smarter to put a little bit into it and fix it up? And now you've got a rental property, so money's coming in. And then when you're ready to sell it in a few years, you're still, like, it's win-win. Buying and sitting seems dumb.
Yeah, but if you, I mean, there's people that have bought on my block for $15,000, and they're just sitting because the value's gone from 15,000 to. There's a house right now for 160 on my block that still needs another 150,000 in rehab. And so, you know, capitalism. And unfortunately, our zoning and code enforcement isn't doing the job properly. Like, people leave it boarded up and don't maintain the lots, and they invest nothing.
So somebody's supposed to go by and make sure that's not happening?
Yeah.
And I guess they don't?
I mean, they get a notice, and then they come out and cut the grass once every 3 months, and then
right.
they don't.
All right. So since you have this platform, other than people getting involved, is there a website you would want people to go to? Do you have any social media page you'd want people to go to?
No, just go. I mean, your neighborhood, whatever neighborhood you live in. You live in West End, like, they have meetings. Go to those meetings. The city has neighborhood planning unit meetings, which
NPUs, as they're called.
I can't go to because they drive me crazy. But like, it's 7 or 8 neighborhoods that are represented by an NPU, and it's like the next scale of involvement in your city.
Okay, so that was my experience on being the treasurer of Kirkwood. It was a lot of everybody's got a good idea, but nobody's really taking ownership. A lot of personalities that have gone at it for the last fucking 10 years. It was a very frustrating experience.
Yeah, I choose to deal with the city on the hyperlocal level, so my block. And then I don't go to neighborhood meetings anymore because I just, that scales, like the middle scale I'm not interested in, so like the neighborhood NPU scale. I'm just, my interests are for the greater city.
Right.
So I go right from the block level to the citywide level.
Got it.
And I mean, that's how the Beltline, you know, I work with Beltline Trees Atlanta. My volunteering with Beltline Trees Atlanta, the bicycle umbrella, and the art scene, like, those are all citywide focuses. But that's just what interests me. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think this is a good place to wrap up, dude.
Well, thanks. It was really enjoyable. It wasn't terribly long.
No, I think, dude, trust me.
And I was starving when I got here, and I'm more starving now. So I really appreciate that we're
all right,
where
so
there's a lot of food.
And you are. I eat there quite often. I do wish it was a couple dollars cheaper, right, for lunch. But I'm like you said earlier. But I like. To me, Fred's and Yala, like, I could eat them every day.
Yeah, Yala's still my favorite. As far as, like, freshness and flavor, it's my favorite food in the city. Still, from the minute it opened to today. Like, going to Yala's.
Do you know they
happy.
Took over that spot over by Tech?
No.
Where? So, what used to be Blaze's place, which was called...
On what street? 14th?
Right across from 10th? The frickin'... Waffle House that's near Tech, or the Barnes & Noble that's near Tech?
Tech Square.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Tech Square.
Richard Blaze had a restaurant called, I can't think of it. They took over that spot, that group. So they're going to have like a day, night, afternoon, like a breakfast spot, a coffee spot, a Yala, and a Fred's. And so like, if you want to, like, any time of day, you can go into that spot and get something. So anyway, whatever that group is called.
Okay.
All right, you're clearly tired and hungry. Let's get out of here.
All right.
Alrighty, that's it and that's all. That's Mr. Angel, who I see all the time, and who I think is a great dude and a great part of Atlanta. Do you have a friend you'd like to see on this program? Many, many, many of the people I interview are referrals from other people. And it's not just other guests, but it's people like you. Say, you know who you should talk to? This guy. Hit me up on Facebook. Send me an email. Also, tell me how you found out about the show. People have been leaving the iTunes reviews. Really appreciate them. Keep doing that. Keep doing that. And bunch of content coming your way, guys. That's all I can say. A shit ton of interviews. I've doubled down on this thing because I love it so much. And I'm really enjoying it. Hope to bring you a lot more soon. Love you, miss you, mean it. I have got to run.